Welcome back to Listen to Your Heart. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Jerry's Heart.
Today's topic, Repatha, Evolokimab. Heart, why'd you pick this one?
Well, Jerry, for people who have had a heart attack, like us, diet and exercise might not be enough to lower the risk of another one.
Okay.
To help know if we're at risk, we should be getting our LDL-C, our bad cholesterol, checked, and talking to our doctor.
I'm listening.
And if it's still too high, Repatha can be added to a statin to lower our LDL-C and our heart attack risk.
Guess it's time to ask about Repatha.
Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Serious allergic reactions can occur. Get medical help right away if you have trouble breathing or swallowing, swelling of the face, lips, tongue, throat, or arms. Common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar, and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site.
Listen to your heart.
Ask your doctor about Repatha. Learn more at Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
But first, this morning, Donald Trump's full range of tariffs come into effect 1 week after he announced them as part of his so-called Liberation Day. Measures commencing today include 20% on Ireland and the European Union and a whopping rate of 104% on China following a tit-for-tat fight with that country. The European Union will vote today on a package of retaliation measures to Trump's earlier steel and aluminium tariffs as they still weigh up a more comprehensive response to the blanket tariffs. To talk about all of this and where we are and where we might go, we're joined by Pascal Donoghue, Minister for Finance and President of the Eurogroup. Minister, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, first of all, tariffs came into effect at, I suppose, midnight American Eastern Standard Time. So they're in place now.
That is correct.
What will happen? Stuff is on the high seas, whether it's Kerrygold butter or crates of Jameson whiskey. It's heading to America. What happens when it arrives?
So when it arrives into the jurisdiction of America, a tariff will be applied to us. And maybe, Pat, to take
now, a step... Who writes the cheque?
Well, just before I answer that question, and I'll do my best to do it, maybe it's worth taking a step back and reminding ourselves what a tariff actually is. Because I think by understanding what it is, it might help then answer the various questions that you have and explain what it means for our economy and that of Europe. A tariff, if you think about it in terms of a good, as you did in the question you put to me, is an additional tax, for want of a better concept, that's paid on a good.
It's like that.
Indeed, that's brought into the jurisdiction of another country. Unlike VAT, VAT is applied on all goods that are sold within a jurisdiction. The difference between that and a tariff is that is a levied on a good that comes into a jurisdiction.
So as it's coming into the territory, they apply this extra tax. The result is the same as a VAT charge, though. You pay more.
You do indeed. And that has three effects in particular. So if you go back to our discussion there, the tariff is like VAT that's applied to a good that's brought into a jurisdiction. It has three effects in particular. The first one is it can push up the price of the good that is brought in, for example, into America. That in turn will reduce the demand for that good, assuming that incomes don't change in the short term, and they rarely do. The second issue is that it will affect the competitiveness of that good. So to give, for example, the Kerrygold example, it will now mean that Kerrygold is more expensive versus a competitor butter product that is developed within America. And then thirdly, it will then affect the profitability of the company that is selling that good into America. Because to go back to your question, there tends to be great reluctance for the consumer to be able to pay that higher tariff, and at times even a reluctance for the economy that's putting the tariff in place to allow that to happen.
So the real question for those people who are supplying the American market is who actually is writing that check to Uncle Sam at the port of entry? Because some goods are delivered, if you like, without the tariff. And there have been tariffs on stuff before. This is not entirely new. There are tariffs levied by America. So whether you deliver it tariff paid to your customer or whether you deliver it and the tariff is paid at the moment of arrival, as it were.
That's it. And if you boil down the three points that I just made a moment ago, that then leads to a simple question, which is who pays? Is it the consumer in America that pays?
Ultimately,
Well, ultimately, I fear and believe that it will be. Or is the person who pays the company and the workers who are making the product who ultimately pay in lower profitability, greater losses, or maybe fewer jobs. And it all boils down to who actually pays.
Now, there will be a push for some people to squeeze their margins to deliver it into the American market cheaper than they did before. And if you like, to share the tariff with the retailer who's going to flog it on.
That's it. And if you relate the three different issues we raised there back to the question of who pays, what will happen and is happening is some manufacturers in Europe and many other parts of the world will say they're willing to make less profit for a period of time. The reason why they would want to do that is to avoid the price of their good going up in America and lead to them selling less. And there are some
signs. They
lose
market share, so they are prepared to subsidise to maintain their market share in the hope that this nightmare will end.
And there are some signs at the moment that some sectors within the global economy are aiming to do that.
Now, the Chinese did it before when tariffs were imposed in the last Trump administration, and it has to be said, continued by Biden. The Chinese absorbed a lot of that and they wanted to maintain their market share.
They did. And one of the questions the President Biden's administration would have raised and the current Trump administration is what is the relationship between the Chinese state and those manufacturers? What is very different this time round is if your listeners have a look at any of the headlines, which they'll be aware of course, is that President Trump has now levied tariffs of 104% combined on goods from China coming into America, making it very hard, I would suspect, for any manufacturer to be able to absorb tariffs of that scale.
Sure. And
the question for us here in Europe is I don't believe we should get caught up in that kind of tension, and the European Union is trying to avoid that happening. But at the same time, the issue we just discussed there of manufacturers looking to absorb lower levels of profitability is something that's very difficult to sustain into the medium term.
Now, the Americans obviously have some problems. I mean, the reason we have this trade imbalance with China and America is that American companies, big corporates, wanted to produce stuff more cheaply. So they offshored to Asia, basically. So, I mean, the iPhone, the prediction was, were it to be built in America with American labor, it would cost $3,500.
Yes, indeed. I mean, there's a number of different things that are happening here, which points to the complexity and the potential for this to cause such great long-term harm. In many, many cases, the reason why American companies have manufacturing presences abroad is that it has been good for their profitability in the long term, or by having manufacturing presences abroad, it has allowed them to access the global market in a different way than if they produced everything at home. And in turn, that has been good for the valuation of those companies and indeed for their profitability. And the expectation that those who own the shares in those companies, that might not continue into the future is one of the reasons we're now seeing such falls in the value of these companies.
Now, our initial response to the original steel and aluminium tariffs will be voted on today and probably passed. The kind of things they're targeting, oranges, orange juice, nuts, chainsaws, fridges. I mean, these are things that are readily replaceable by European companies and by European countries. Lots of oranges in Spain, for example.
And that leads on to one of the dilemmas that we're very much aware of here in Ireland when you respond back to another country applying tariffs. What you want to do then is apply tariffs to goods that are coming in to Europe that do the least harm to the European economy. And that is why we are doing two things. Firstly, we're applying tariffs to goods that are coming in, for which there may well be indeed European substitutes available. And secondly, by going on particular parts of the economy as opposed to a global response and applying tariffs to everything, we're trying to avoid the kind of escalatory dynamic that we're seeing happening elsewhere.
Okay, but there's chapter two.
We want to deliver this, an outcome of this, via negotiation as opposed to a permanent trade war.
This is chapter one that we're talking about in terms of the European response. Chapter two is yet to come. This is the response to the 20% global tariff that Trump has applied. So what next from the European Union?
Well, we'll have to assess that stage by stage. What we shouldn't be doing is indicating publicly what we're going to do in the next phase of a negotiation. But what we want to see happen is Commissioner Šefčovič, and Commissioner Šefčovič is the person in the Commission, he's a commissioner for the European Union, and he has legal responsibility for trade policy for all of the EU. And the reason that makes sense for us is no one country on their own in Europe would have the negotiation scale that you do if you do in comparison to pooling all of your economies together. That's what he is doing. And we want him and expect, and he wants to engage with the US to avoid us moving to measures that could be bigger and with us for some time.
So Europe is trying to do a forensic job on this to hurt America while minimising the damage to Europe.
I don't like using the phrase necessarily hurting America, because at the bottom of all of this then is workers, it's shoppers, it's ordinary people like we have here in Europe who are going to pay the price for all of this. But it is ultimately about trying to find ways.
But he's trying to hurt us. Why can't we simply say, we'll hurt you back? That's what the Chinese are doing. And they say they're in it to the very end. That's what the Chinese have said. And you know what it's like in Asia. You don't want to lose face. The problem is that, you know, the great deal maker doesn't want to lose face either.
Well, I think 2 points in relation to that. Firstly, from a substance point of view, we are here in the European Union doing the right thing. If I was here on your programme here this morning and tariffs of 104% were being applied to products being exported from the European Union, we'd be having an entirely different discussion regarding Europe and Ireland. Substantively, the EU is doing the right thing. And then from a language point of view, why don't I use that kind of language? I do believe, and this goes into other subjects, that the use of language like that and the kind of language we've seen become normalised in American politics is not the kind.
Some people get a wild haircut or book a spontaneous trip when life throws them a curveball. But Molly? Well, she dove headfirst into a world of no-strings-attached sex, secret rendezvous, forbidden affairs, and unforgettable adventures. And together, we tell every juicy detail in Dying for Sex, Wondery's award-winning podcast that's now streaming on a TV near you, starring Michelle Williams and Jenny Slate. And to top it off, we're dropping brand new bonus episodes where I sit down with the cast to spill all the spicy secrets. Desire, friendship, self-discovery, and the ultimate bucket list of pleasure. This is a story that had everyone talking. Listen to the original Dying for Sex and brand new episodes wherever you get your podcasts. Binge the original series before anyone else.
Stripe helps many of the world's most influential companies grow their revenue and build a more profitable business. Whether it's Hertz making checkout a smooth ride for their customers, OpenAI answering unprecedented demand, or PGA chipping away at back office inefficiency, Stripe's financial infrastructure platform helps companies achieve ambitious goals. No matter what success looks like for your business, Stripe helps ensure the complexity of financial systems doesn't get in your way. Learn more at stripe.com.
Kind of language, but I believe we should be using.
The president of China has actually called Trump out. He said he's a bully and we're not going to give in to bullying tactics. And it's quite clear that's what America is at. It's the big stick they're wielding and they're trying to, I suppose, become a new imperial power rather than just the greatest global power. They want to be an imperial power. They want to take over Greenland. They want to annex Canada. All of this kind of talk. Isn't it time that they were called out?
But we are calling out their behaviour and we are responding back in a way that aims to do two things. Number one, minimise the harm to our own economy that might be caused by retaliatory measures we have to adopt within the European Union. And secondly, doing it in a way that gives some prospect for engagement and negotiation. The relationship between the European Union and America is a relationship of many billions of euros per trade every single day. No matter how slender the prospects may be at the moment, particularly given the role of America in Europe at the moment from a security perspective, we should be identifying and pursuing any avenue for negotiation.
But the whole process is utterly unfair. Now, this is a little piece of audio. It was a Democratic Senator Mark Warner questioning US Trade Representative Jemison Greer on the tariff which America has imposed on Australia.
Australia got hit with a 10% tariff as well.
Senator, Australia has the lowest rate available under the new program. They ban imports of American beef.
There is a trade, we already have a free trade agreement. We have a trade surplus. So getting the least bad, why didn't they get whacked in the first place?
We're addressing the $1.2 trillion deficit, the largest in human history, that President Biden left us with. We should be running up the score in Australia.
Ambassador Greer, answer the question on Australia. They have a free trade agreement. Why? They are an incredibly important national security partner. Why were they whacked with a tariff?
Senator, despite the agreement, they ban our beef, they ban our pork, they're getting ready to impose measures on our digital companies.
With your Greek letter formula, the fact that we have a trade surplus.
We have a global tariff on everywhere. We're trying to address the $1.2 trillion deficit that Biden left us with.
Sir, you're a much smarter person than that answer.
So, a trade surplus they have with Australia, and yet they impose a tariff. I mean, that is bullying.
And it reflects the different intentions that are in place in relation to America. Like what I think is happening at the moment in the US is historic in nature and has the potential to inflict great harm on America. And then what I care about is what it could do here in Ireland and across Europe. We have the country that invented and developed the rules on global trade for the first time in its history being the country that wants to challenge them. And I think what that exchange revealed is it's very likely that the intentions behind it are not just economic in nature. It reflects to the politics of America and the way America has changed.
And I know we can't really interfere in American politics, but Peter Navarro, who's the man who seemingly is advising Trump on trade, he's a fraud because he wrote a book and in it he quoted an economist called Ron Vara. Ron Vara does not exist. It's an anagram of Peter Navarro's own name. And he was called out on that yesterday by no other than Elon Musk, who also described him as a moron and basically thick as a brick. And this is the man who's guiding America. Can't we do the same? I mean, when Simon Harris goes in and talks to Howard Lutnick, has he got the courage to say to Howard Lutnick, you know Navarro's a fraud?
So, look, how do you think that kind of conversation would go at the moment? Like, we are a government. We, along with other governments in the European Union, are trying to open up a negotiation. I read Peter Navarro's op-ed in the Financial Times yesterday. I strongly disagree with his view with regard to global trade policy for America and for Europe.
But
and
if he's a con man, quoting an economist that does not exist.
But I go back to the point that I just made to you. I would prefer to deal with the substance of the arguments that are being made and look at how we deal with them and look after ourselves here in Ireland and look after our part of the world here in Europe. When the Taoiseach, when Simon Harris meets Howard Lutnick later on today, we're not looking to engage in just a conversation. We're looking to open up what I hope will lead to a discussion between the European Union and America on a trade negotiation. And we here in Europe have to engage in the substance of these issues and not get distracted by the language that is wrapped around them in America that American politicians are using.
There are two approaches. Obviously, there's a softly, softly European approach at the moment, and it's an approach that Ursula von der Leyen has been advocating to China, who have taken a more robust approach to Trump, calling him a bully. The Canadians took a very robust approach with Trump as well. Europe is taking a softly, softly approach. It remains to be seen which approach will actually work best.
But you put a point to me earlier on that is at the heart of thinking about this question. You made the point to me this is just the first phase. And it is the first phase. We are in a moment of transition for the global economy. And what we are doing in the European Union is recognising the risk that this could take some time to evolve and then resolve. And in order to get to the point of improvement, we are better off using the trade tools that are available to us in a gradual way across a negotiation that could take some time. I hope we have to avoid using those tools. But if we're looking for a negotiation and want to be successful in it, it's better to have decisions at your disposal as opposed to using them all at once. And I just repeat what I said a moment ago, Pat. If I was in your studio here this morning and tariffs of 104% had been applied to European exports to America, we'd be having a really different discussion then.
But I mean, this is a man out of control. 104%,
regarding what that means for Irish jobs.
104% tariffs. I mean, he could do that. He's absolutely whimsical in the way he makes decisions. It's quite chaotic what's going on. He is guided by one principle, which is tariffs is the stick with which to beat every other country in the world. So he could whimsically just decide it'll be 100% on Europe too, if you offend him in some small way.
So this
has got to come to an end.
So let's say your analysis is right and this is driven by whimsy, and let's use your framework for a moment. Is it not better then to have a negotiator on the other side of the table that's guided by something else, that approaches this in a reasoned and strategic way, with the ability to continue to have decisions it can make in the future, as opposed to making every single decision that we can here today? There are two consequences that are now evolving within the American economy. The first one is the repercussions of decisions they've made themselves. The second one is the repercussions of decisions that other countries have made to respond back to what the US have done. We should allow that to play out, and we should identify when or if there's an opportunity to sit down with the US. And what the Taoiseach is doing in Washington today is, for when that moment happens, as I hope and believe it will, to have relationships in place that then allow that negotiation to be productive and to avoid the very worst happening.
Pharma is going to be hit. I mean, he confirmed that last evening. So, I mean, any softly, softly or fond imaginings that he might treat us differently because they need raw agreements, raw ingredients, that's just not going to happen. He's going to hit us.
I have no such softly, softly expectations regarding what the future could bring. I'm a realist. I'm a realist who believes in also allowing an effective negotiation to take place at the right point. And I go back to the contention I've made throughout this interview. So at the moment, as you correctly say, they have not applied additional tariffs to medicines, to life science, to medical products. Surely we should be in a position then to respond back in the future if that is to happen. And that is at the heart of the approach the EU is using, recognising that more steps could yet happen from America. Very much hope that doesn't happen, and great efforts are being made to avoid that happening. But if it does happen, we're in a position then where we haven't made all of the decisions that are available to us at the very start of this negotiation. And you are right, life science is really important to Europe, really important to Ireland, but it's also very important to the consumers in America who use those medicines.
Now, the nuclear option has been spoken about quietly, and that is what's called the anti-coercion instrument. Were this to be applied by Europe, what would that actually mean?
So the anti-coercion instrument is a further set of decisions that the EU can make that applies, for example, to payments, to services that are American in nature, that we would then apply an additional levy or charge to.
Now, we are greatly in surplus in terms of what we export in physical goods,
yeah,
but we're greatly in deficit in terms of financial stuff. America is greatly in surplus with us in terms of those financial services. So how vulnerable are we should the anti-coercion instrument be used?
We and a number of other economies across the European Union would have a particular effect on our economy were we to apply those measures. And that is why in the engagement that the Taoiseach has had with other trade ministers, we said that all these measures should be on the table. They should all be evaluated, but we are better off actually activating them if we find ourselves in a position where it is beyond doubt that they are needed.
All right. Now, the point I made there, by the way, about America exporting much more in terms of financial services to us than we to them. However, the opposite is true in terms of goods. Why doesn't Trump just look at the whole picture?
But that is the case that we are making. And in the analysis that President Trump and his team have with regard to the American economy, there's a particular focus on manufactured goods. And I imagine that focus on manufacturing is because it's so visible in any economy. Any economy that has the loss of manufacturing jobs within it, that sees the closure of plants, the closure of factories, that has really tangible political and social effects. Whereas the export of services, which is how many economies over the last number of decades have become wealthier and employed more people, is less tangible. It's less apparent than a container leaving a port with, for example, a car in it.
The Trump world, the MAGA world, many of the people are incapable because of a lack of education, which has been brought about by multiple administrations, not just Republicans, but Democrats as well. They're incapable of taking up those kind of jobs. So they need to be given the nuts and bolts jobs. And that's what Trump is trying to do. Whether he can ever be successful is another question.
Well, America has great strengths from a service economy point of view and also has some of the very greatest minds, particularly when it comes to technology, as indeed does China. That is a reflection on the quality of some of their universities. But from an Irish point of view in particular, services has been a really important part of how our economy has developed. Financial services, digital services. We've been able to play a role in exporting those back to other parts of the world while we have continued with our more traditional and highly visible exports, for example, with regard to food and beverages. And fundamentally, as you say, within the particular worldview that has taken hold within America, there's a higher premium placed on the tangible goods and the effect they can have in economies and in democracies.
On that note, Minister for Finance...
We should end on a note, though, of optimism,
okay,
Pat, because we've covered
please.
All some dark topics here. Like, you have correctly challenged me on what this means from a trade policy point of view and what it could mean for our economy and for Europe. But it's worth continuing to make the point that here in Ireland, you know, we're approaching all of this with a record number of people at work and with our public finances in surplus and with incredible employers and highly skilled workers across all parts of our economy. And I will make the familiar case to you, Pat, that while the challenge here is great, I do believe with time we will rise.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Some people get a wild haircut or book a spontaneous trip when life throws them a curveball. But Molly? Well, she dove headfirst into a world of no-strings-attached sex, secret rendezvous, forbidden affairs, and unforgettable adventures. And together, we tell every juicy detail in Dying for Sex, Wondery's award-winning podcast that's now streaming on a TV near you, starring Michelle Williams and Jenny Slate. And to top it off, we're dropping brand new bonus episodes where I sit down with the cast to spill all the spicy secrets. Desire, friendship, self-discovery, and the ultimate bucket list of pleasure. This is a story that had everyone talking. Listen to the original Dying for Sex and brand new episodes wherever you get your podcasts. Binge the original series before anyone else.